Min campus alihor, miai Karsten Schwine. Akoma programmiħor fi sensiela minn campus għaliħor, dinija fil-fat it-tini sensiela fuq campus FM fej tħallew sensiela fi t-tini sensiela qed inkompli niltaqa ma' nies professjonisti, akademiċi, riċerkaturi, nies fid-dinja tal-management, imma anke studenti biex nesploraw ftit il-career path, kif ngħidu bl-Ingliż, ta' individwi illi jaħdmu ħanajdu hekk flimkien brabta fl-orbita ħanuża kelma hekk ftit spazjali ta' universitajiet. Ma jfissirx li huma bil-fors jaħdmu f'kampus wieħed, fil-fatt ħafna minnhom jgħidulna kif permezz tal-vjaġġar, permezz ta' proġetti, permezz ta' kollaborazzjonijiet, anke programmi, pereżempju bħal tal-Unjoni Ewropea ma mhux biss, jivvjaġġaw joħolqu proġetti ta' riċerka, ta' kollaborazzjoni illi tkabbar l-esperjenza tagħhom fil-qasam partikolari li huma jispeċjalizzaw fih. U hemm anke min permezz ta' l-istejjer aneddoti rakkonti tagħhom jgħidilna kif fil-verità llum il-ġurnata kważi qas tista' tgħid li tista' tispeċjalizza wisq għaliex tagħmel x'tagħmel speċjalment fid-dinja ta' dik li nsejħu humanities jew social sciences, kif tafu jiena niġi iktar mid-dinja tal-politika kulturali, allura nitkellem anke ma' nies li fl-edukazzjoni għolja jiġu minn dik id-dinja wkoll jew jersqu lejha bil-mod il-mod naraw u nisimaw iktar kif hemm dinjiet illi iwasslu forsi għal kollaborazzjonijiet illi wieħed ma jobsorx li ħajasal għalihom fi żmien bikri tal-karriera tiegħu jew tagħha. U l-każ tal-lum fuq il-programm minn kampus għalieħor huwa tipiku ta' dan it-traġett, ta' dan l-itinerarju, ta' dan il-vjaġġ li mhuwiex linja sempliċi, anzi. U l-persona li ħankellimilhom hija Dr. Kayla Rush hija Irlandiża, bħalissa bbażata Dublin l-Irlanda, imma fix-xogħol tagħha fl-istudji tagħha tivvjaġġa mhux ħażin anke fir-Renju Unit u fl-Ewropa. Hija Research Fellow tal-Marie Curie tal-programm ukoll tal-Unjoni Ewropea fl-Iskola tat-Teoloġija, il-Filosofija u l-mużika City University Dublin. U interessanti ħafna il-xogħol u r-riċerka tagħha, anki nħajjarlek li kun anki fittex fuqha online, anki segwi Twitter feed pereżempju tagħha, għaliex il-kapaċitajiet tagħha u l-ħiliet tagħha u anki l-kurzitajiet tagħha jgħinuha taqgħat dinjiet differenti. Fil-fatt anki kif smajtu l-iskola stess fej hemm tuopera taqgħat it-teoloġija, il-filosofija u l-mużika. Il-dottorat tagħha huwa fl-antropoloġija soċjali minn Queen's University Belfast, ħaddu 3 snin ilu, u fir-riċerka tagħha ħarset lej l-arti tal-komunità fid-dinja kontemporanja tal-Irlanda ta' fuq. Ħarġet ukoll ktieb propju dis-sena maħruġ mill-Bergan li jismu The Cracked Art World, Conflict, Austerity and Community Arts in Northern Ireland, kif tista' tobsu bbażat fuq ir-riċerka tat-teżi tagħha, u r-riċerka tagħha ta' bħalissa kif ħadejna jistess tħares ħafna lej il-mużika rock, l-aċċess għall-mużika rock b'mod privat, b'mod diġitali, b'mod online, anke l-ħlasijiet u d-drittijiet tal-awtur jitlu fiha, però tħares ħafna lej d-dinja tal-komunità kif smajtu qabel. Jiġri tħares anki mbagħad dak l-aċċess kif jittraduċi ruħu f'skejjel, f'programmi, f'proġetti tal-komunità, u b'xi mod tħares anki ħafna kif ħanisimgħu lejda l-aspett ta' kunflitt istess tajt meta inti titrabba bej l-Irlanda, l-Irlanda futta fuq il-kwistjoni tal-konflitt għatmi l-bot. U tħares anki speċjali l-valuri tal-klassi baxxa, medja, għolja, dawk il-klassijiet li b'ximot anki f'ċertu postijiet tad-dinja għadhom relevanti ħafna u l-kwistjoni tal-identità. Hemm qiegħed toħroġ pubblikazzjonijiet regolari, partikolarment pereżempju fil-Journal of Popular Music Education. Hija wkoll editriċi tal-Irish Journal of Anthropology. Qabel ma nissaktaw biex nisimgħu l-intervista ma' Dr. Kayla Rush minn Dublin City University, Dublin, l-Irlanda, infakkarkom biss li l-mużika li takkompanjana matul din is-sensiela, anke dik ta' qabela, u li għadejjem aċċessibbli online fuq sit Campus FM hija tal-proġett Medinea, proġett Ewropew. Proġett bellezza li għas artisti, muzicisti, kompożituri mid-dinja Euro-Mediterranja lokalment immexxi minn Arc Consultancy flimkien ma' entitajiet oħra bħal l-Orkestra Filarmonika Maltija kif ukoll il-Kunsill Malti għall-Arti u sħab oħra li jipparteċipaw fuq livell Ewropew u Mediterranju. Welcome back to listeners of Min Campus Alihor on Campus FM, the weekly program where I meet people, colleagues, peers, professionals, at this point even friends, some of whom I would have worked with closely to the field of cultural policy, others maybe more on an ad hoc basis, depending maybe on a project or some other thing which would have brought us together. Over the past few years, obviously the pandemic over the past few months has caused certain difficulties even in travel, in communication, in contact, but on the other hand, especially with regards to the digital world, it has made possible, sort of provided a form of excuse to try to bring people together again. And this is one case in point. In fact, our listeners of Min Campus Alihor today will have heard from the introduction, my usual introduction in Maltese, that my guest today, Dr. Kayla Rush, is very much active in this field and more, and somehow our contact came through the brokering intercultural exchange in the field of cultural policy, headed by professors like Rafaela Henze, who was earlier on the show in the first series, also Tori Durer, based in Ireland, as is Kayla, and other people who together, some of whom have also featured on the show, somehow work within this large field of cultural policy. But first of all, let me start by welcoming and saying hello to Kayla. Hi, Kayla.
Hi, Kirsten. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Thank you for joining me all the way virtually, digitally from Dublin, connecting here to the campus at the University of Malta at Tal Eroq, not far away from Valletta. I think my first question, like with other guests usually on this show, is in your case, as listeners will have heard from your from the introduction I did at the beginning related to your bio note, you work in a number of fields, very interesting, very related one to the other, but also very distinct, because maybe traditionally, and to a certain extent even maybe listeners based here in Malta, but maybe even others from around the world, once they can listen to this podcast on the University of Malta website, may relate maybe to the strands of theology, of philosophy and music, which all together are present in the name of the school you are based in. As a fellow, And somehow, maybe, as I said, traditionally, we might sort of think of them as not distinct and separate, but sort of quite clear areas within which there is a lot of diversity. But I must admit, reading more and preparing for this program about how the school operates and how then you come in, for example, with a strong anthropological element and angle, really got me thinking. So I think that my first question is relating it maybe to your first steps, sort of moving chronologically on maybe where the first interests started. How sort of do you relate where you are today with your first steps? Keeping in mind our listeners are keen on sort of learning about career paths and how things develop, if they develop a little bit like a crab, sort of moving side to side or a bit zigzag, or whether it was more straightforward in your case.
That's a really good question. I think of kind of my disciplinary trajectory in terms of sort of all the different things that I do as a bit lucky. Like I sort of happened into things that are of interest to me through some luck, some kind of following my gut and choosing paths that took me to the right place.
I think kind of that's very heartening, actually, because many of us, and I'm sure many of our listeners, will say, okay, that's not some recipe, some golden rule, which is hard to follow. If it's something which sort of stimulates your interest, that's a really good starting point.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a bit of luck in a lot of just kind of following things that interest me. So I find that the thing that drives me as a scholar is answering questions, you know, finding out information I didn't have before. And that's really how I ended up doing any cultural policy work, you know, that I'm not a cultural policy scholar by training. That would be what I set out to do. But really, at every step of my research career, the people that I'm working with are talking about cultural policy. So I follow that question up then, and I end up working in that area. And it's the same with the bit of work that I've done on religion in the past. It's the same sort of this trajectory through art and music. Although my current position working on the anthropology of music is a bit of a homecoming. I am a musician. I've played the French horn since I was 11. I have a conservatory degree. Went into university thinking I was going to study ethnomusicology and did it. And then a kind of diagonal trajectory into anthropology, which really turned out to be my disciplinary home. So I do a lot of different things. I'm very fortunate that I can move in a lot of different disciplines. But really my home base is anthropology and everything sort of branches out from there. The thing I will say is at this point, being an early career scholar in Europe today, you have to be interdisciplinary. So some of it, well, a lot of it is luck in terms of the things that interest me. Some of it is tactical, you know, that pitching myself as someone who can do anthropology, who can do sociology, can do religion, can do music, can do cultural policy, is what I have to do to have a career. Which I think, you know, there's a lot of pressures on early career scholars right now. I won't deny that. And that is really unfortunate for myself and for others. But I think there is value in this sort of loosening of disciplinary boundaries that we see. The fact that people like myself who are just starting out can move in between disciplines, can be part of networks like the one that we met through, and can speak to scholars in other disciplines in a way that is really fruitful and really exciting. Is good there.
Yes.
To sort of the intense pressures that are placed on all academics right now.
Somehow, this theme, it's one of the main ones, I think, even though you might not find it in and of itself as an area of study one would find on a curriculum or a course of studies. However, it's there. It's something talked about, discussed, students sort of consider how much to define themselves according to a particular field of study or not. Go for a more interdisciplinary approach. Somehow, this discussion reminds me always of when at my undergraduate level here at the University of Malta, reading English literature and film, I had come across George Eliot's Middlemarch. And there is a strong undercurrent there about wanting to somehow find the answers to everything and combine combine things. So there was this very strong sort of British London, but also industrial area based drive towards trying to find sort of ways of connecting all the social sciences, but even the hard sciences, which were developing very much in the 18th, 19th centuries. And this was always something which I kept thinking about, because somehow, sometimes there seems to be trends, even in different places, in different campuses around the world, really, where people try to go for more definition, and at other times, where so that definition blurs, and it's between the lines that becomes really, really interesting, almost the counterpoint. You mentioned the musical element, which we'll have time to talk a bit about later, but it's sort of almost that element, which then attracts attention. Over your career, so quite a few years now, would you say you have observed this sort of ebbing and flowing of interest on the campuses you have been in, so Ireland, elsewhere in the UK, and sort of, let's say, sort of the Western part, mostly, of academia?
That's a good question. I think what kind of individual researchers are interested in and what campuses are doing are sort of at odds. In that this is something I speak about quite a bit with friends who are at the same career stage as me, where, you know, there's this sort of abstract push to be interdisciplinary, and you're asked to be interdisciplinary, but then when it comes to applying for jobs and applying for grants, you find yourself in terms of a discipline. So I've spent so much time talking to, for example, the research support person here, the person who works on European grants, about, well, how do we pick the right definition to give this so that it will get funded? The other thing I'll say is it makes it really hard to find a job if you're interdisciplinary in the way I am. I'm still struggling out there on the job market, which everyone is, to be fair. That's not just anything. But I think some of that is because there's a lot of things that I can do and things that interest me. But when places are hiring, you know, they are looking for researchers, but they're also looking for people who can teach in a very disciplinary way. And not an old school way, but can teach in a more traditional sense, which I can also do. But because I've done it across disciplines as diverse as history, architecture, in addition to anthropology and music, you know, it makes it very difficult to sell yourself for a more permanent job. So it's great for research funding, but if you want sort of a permanent job that's going to give you a pension and allow you to stay in one place for a while, it can be difficult. So I think there's kind of a mismatch there. And we're starting to get both this institution and the one where I did my PhD have these sort of large amalgamated schools where all the disciplines maybe aren't obviously put together. So I'm currently in the School of Theology, Philosophy, and Music. I have wonderful colleagues. It's a great school. I'm very privileged to have been able to teach across all those disciplines. But the reason they're amalgamated is not scholarly. The reason is practical. Dublin City University, where I work, is an amalgamation of either three or five campuses. It all amalgamated before I got here. So everything's kind of getting lumped together more based on who was on this campus before than based on some sort of, you know, abstract philosophical idea about
a particular vision which led to that development.
Which is cool because it means, you know, I can collaborate with other departments on other campuses. It has, as I said, it's given me opportunities to teach in ethics, and I'm teaching some of the world religion scholars this year. But it is a bit, it's more kind of happenstance, and I think we see that at the university level, and it maybe doesn't connect to some idea about interdisciplinary that we have as individual scholars doing research ourselves.
Okay, this is really interesting. We'll come back to it at the second part of our conversation. Usually, sort of this program, in its hour's legs, tries to sort of split into three. Having a bit of an introduction, a bit of a background, then looking a bit into the here and now, even the research going on within the guest's field of competence, but also around it. And I think in our case today, there's quite a bit to say there. And then also looking going a bit forward and looking a bit around in the third part. And we also puncture those with two musical pauses. Before we come to the first one with you, because even your choices are very interesting in today's program of Min Campus Ali or here on Campus FM, you did mention your musical background and the fact that you learned the French horn and played it from a young age, from the age of 11, and sort of involved in performances and working and performing with other people. How much, and I'll tell you why I'll ask you, I'm asking you this, how much did that, do you think, on a really personal, subjective level, nothing maybe too scientific, but how much maybe did that influence or is related maybe to yourself as a person, to the fact that you thrive in crossing boundaries and interdisciplinary approach? Because it's something I see, for example, in children my daughter's age, she's 11, so the first year of what we call here motor secondary school, where people who sort of tend to go to collaborative work, if it's performing arts, if it's music, even if it's sports, somehow even then maybe later on seem to enjoy breaking particular strict borders rather than trying to define themselves according to one school of thought.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about it that way, Chris. You're not wrong. So one of the things I found out when I went to a classical conservatory is that the French horn is the only instrument that plays in a woodwind quintet, a brass quintet, and a string quintet.
Oh.
Kind of the classical formations of those ensembles.
That's really interesting.
Because, yes, it's a brass instrument, but it's able to blend with all these other sounds. So I played, even though I'm not a woodwind instrument, I played in a woodwind quintet in my undergraduate conservatory days, because the French horn just has that ability to move in spaces. And it's something to do with, so the French horn has this beautiful sound. Everyone I know who plays the horn chose it because of the sound, and I'm the same. It was one of those things, I heard it, and I was like, yeah, that's what I want to play. I think there's something there in terms of sort of that ability to move between spaces. More practically speaking, something that I tell people who aren't familiar with orchestral spaces is that horn players tend to be a bit weird, particularly-wise. Most horn players I've met are just odd in a good way, if that makes sense. Unusual, we're creative. The French horn is also not the instrument to play if you're afraid of making mistakes. I don't think I've ever heard a horn solo performed live, even at kind of the very top levels, that didn't have at least one obvious mistake in it. It's just a very difficult instrument to play.
I was going to ask you, is it down to the instrument? Is it down to the music written for French horn, its interpretation, bit of everything?
It's a bit of everything. It's a bit finicky, but like in a way that's really fun to explore, if that makes sense. So a lot of what you're doing when you play the horn live is making these on-the-spot automatic adjustments to tuning. You're sort of moving your body in these very small ways to get the sound you want. And it's a very kind of physically intensive thing to play. Sort of the keys that you have are a bit less, I'm trying to think of the right way to say this. They don't kind of lock in the sound on the tone in the same way that like a trumpet would. More fluid because the horn develops out of these sort of older school hunting horns that didn't have keys or valves. That's all a little bit boring, but
you're mentioning even the hunting tradition, sort of going to something which is not designed for being in an orchestral setting or a musical setting, but a very practical approach to it. Another side which is interesting to bring in.
Yeah, so it's challenging in a way that I personally enjoy, but it is imprecise. I think most of the people I know who play the horn do have more of a comfort level with trying things and making mistakes. It's also just less competitive than an instrument like the violin, where there's so many people who play it that you have to play it perfectly. You know what I mean? So it's
So there's a bit more room around you, which you develop, which you choose and develop to sort of make mistakes, which again reminds me of what you've said till now, which in the field which you've developed, which you picked or picked you, maybe it's a bit of both, there is obviously room to explore without having directly to come to some direct clear result a priori, sort of. Kaya, let's come to the first track that you've chosen for us. Can you tell us something about it and introduce it?
So this is a piece for horn and string orchestra called Castel del Monte by the Italian film composer Nino Rota. This was my senior recital solo piece. Graduate. I love this piece. Listening to it always gives me chills, and it takes me back to that feeling of playing this in a recital hall with great acoustics, and the sound sort of like fills up, and it fills the hall, and it surrounds you. And this, it's beautiful, but this opening line is also kind of does call back to this sort of hunting sounds. So it gives you sort of that more organic, earlier horn sound, as well as being a technically difficult and very beautiful piece. It's also just in the range I'm comfortable with. Solos sort of tend to be in the higher register, and I'm sort of a mid-range player, and that's where I really shine, and I'm all about kind of making a beautiful sound in that register. So yeah, I love this piece. It feels like a good way to start it because this is before I began my scholarly career proper, but it's something that I really love.
Very good. Let's listen to it then. So we're back after that beautiful piece, which my guest today on the show, Dr. Kyla Rush, suggested we listen to. Maybe many of the listeners of Min Campus Elihor here on Campus FM are familiar with music by Nino Rota because of films, because of so far cultural proximity to to Italian composers, music writers, conductors, but something like that really, I think, makes us stop and think. Reflecting also what you said, Kyle, at the beginning of the program, in the first part of today's program. In the second part, I'd like to go sort of a bit more into maybe your more recent past and work and research. As you said, so there are many sides, which is actually also quite common sometimes with other guests on this show, if somehow they relate to social sciences, even cultural policy, and somehow rather than having specialized directly in a particular strand or field, they from time to time or in parallel, contemporaneously, sort of play on different registers, so to speak. And that could be sometimes a challenge, but also a strength. And in your work, at least from what I was reading a little bit about, and I remember even your presentations in a few settings of the brokering intercultural exchange, for example, possibly sometime at Goldsmiths University, but also I think at Belfast at some point. I remember sort of this multidisciplinary approach. However, yes, there is sort of, I always got the feeling that there was a strong interest, not only in the policy level, but also in the politics level. If it was about the human being, if it was about identity, if it was about gender. So I wonder whether, I got a good impression of your recent work, and also a little bit of maybe background to that.
So to the interest in politics, you mean?
Yes.
Well, so I did my MA and PhD in Belfast in Northern Ireland, which... if you want to do person-centered research in Northern Ireland, or really any research on Northern Ireland, you have to get your head around the political situation there. Northern Ireland is a very specific, very unique place in the world, and I love it. I loved living there. I loved researching there. But it's a place that doesn't really make a lot of sense if you don't spend the time doing that. So it sort of suffuses everything you do, because we can't get away from it. One of the things that I've argued in my work, that I argue particularly strongly in my book that's going to be out next year, is that a lot of artists are trying to do politics in a different way, to sort of think of Northern Ireland in a way that moves beyond the whole Protestant Catholic divide. Northern Ireland is a more diverse place, is a place that's moving into the 21st century. So it's not to say that all of the political aspects that I do are rooted in this history of conflict, but you do have to understand it if you want to make sense of Northern Ireland, but also if you want to speak intelligently and empathetically with people who live there. It would, you know, as someone whose research is grounded in relationship, it would be very foolish of me to go in not knowing that as well. And I will also say a lot of what drives my work and part of the reason that it's so diverse is that I listen to and I prioritize what people are saying in the field. So I went out to work with artists and they're talking to me about politics and policy. I have to write about that because to ignore it would be to dishonor the time that they've given to me and the kind of the relationships that they've built with me.
You mentioned there, Kyla, your upcoming book, and we'll mention that later on. Maybe we can sort of get a quick preview of what that will be about. at the same time, because of the way you combine work, which is sort of something that people like yourself sort of try to combine a number of levels within their field of studies and beyond, and also combines of the practical side, as you mentioned yourself, together with sort of possible finding funding sources and audiences for research, and being innovative in the way also of approaching things. You've done and still do a number of things. So apart from the writing, there's also the editing. For example, your general editor role of the Irish Journal of Anthropology. So this also puts you in touch with even more writers and researchers.
Yes.
What could you say about sort of the recent climate in terms of where research in all these fields, interlocked fields, is going?
Obviously, the pandemic has sort of affected all of that. So everyone's sort of scrambling to look at the pandemic, which makes sense. You know, it's a it's not to discount how important and how disruptive that has been. So there's movement toward that, but obviously it's a artificial movement. It's something we wouldn't have said 2 years ago. And by artificial, I just mean that it's not where it was going at that point. Yeah.
It sort of broke through everything else, really, and upended any other plans, long-term plans, and observations. It sort of really turned things on their head.
Exactly. One thing that I've noticed, and that maybe the pandemic is disrupting in a good way, is at least in sort of the science aspect of what I do, there's a lot of focus on entanglements, or, you know, the study of how everything is connected, which makes sense in a globalized world. And I think it's important that we acknowledge that, we acknowledge how we are connected to people around the world and to things and ideas and places. But one thing that I have found in my work is that there's not as much scholarly emphasis on disconnection. And I think a lot of people do feel disconnected in various ways. So that was sort of the main thing I was trying to pull out in my PhD work, and now in my book that's coming out, is that within this globalized world, there are very deep relational disconnections between people and organizations, between people and their politicians, which I think a lot of us have felt during the various lockdowns, during the pandemic. There's not always kind of a clear line of communication from everyday people to the people who represent them, who make decisions at the political level. So I think maybe the pandemic is sort of highlighting this thing that I'd been finding anyway, that there is something to be studied there in terms of how things are not always all the time 100% entangled and connected. I think there's also a very profitable, not monetarily profitable, beneficial would be a better word, move towards looking more clearly and more rigorously at how privilege and inequality operate. Obviously, that's always been there in the social sciences, which is a good thing, and it's one of the reasons I'm attracted to the social sciences. But with both kind of the unequal effects of the pandemic and the pandemic recovery, and of course the global discussions and global movements around racial inequality, sort of being forced in a very good way to look very, very openly at how inequality operates in the world, but also within academia. And that can only be a good thing. Academia does exclude people. It does operate in very unequal ways. So shining a light on that is not the only thing, you know, to be done to address that. But I think it is important. And if our fields are starting to look at that more clearly, that can only be a good thing.
Would you say that's growing as an area of interest, sort of shining a light internally on the inequalities in academia in terms, for example, access, gaining a foothold, accessing funding, and then sort of even representation on a scholarly level? Would you say sort of it's still a patchwork thing, or would you say sort of across social sciences in general, at least maybe in Ireland, UK, some of Europe and the US, it seems to be a growing thing, a growing movement, maybe?
Definitely growing, but unfortunately still very patchwork. It's something that's very important to me that I try to do my best to foreground, although very imperfectly. And it's something I see in especially the early career scholars around me. So I think it's sort of a movement from below. Unfortunately, it is unequal, and I think maybe I have an optimistic outlook on it because I've been lucky to surround myself with people for whom this is an important thing.
That's an interesting point, isn't it, Kyla? It's also the connections and the alliances one builds. Sometimes, ironically, it might give an impression that that is the same everywhere. It just reminds you a bit of the phenomenon of the echo chamber when one speaks to the converted, because oneself sort of surrounds oneself with like-minded people. Yeah. But at the same time, I also am aware that you try to balance that not only through research, academia, and building maybe alliances and connections in the academic world, which are not only within your comfort zone, but also going beyond it. But you're also aware of sort of what lies beyond, so to speak. And this program itself is called, loosely translated, Connecting Campuses. But it also tries to look beyond, to engage with other communities, other groups of people, different demographic groups, not to sort of somehow close oneself in. Well, I wouldn't use really the word, the phrase ivory tower anymore, because it sounds really, really outdated. But sometimes, sort of, as we tend to do, sort of one builds sort of upwards or downwards, but the side to side, the spread might be a little bit limited. Would you agree with that? That, in a way, sort of one challenge of researchers, writers, academics today is keeping that balance, so to speak.
Yeah, I think so. I think it is challenging, and I think with all the institutional pressure we're getting to move beyond, which I think is a very good thing, I think academics, myself included, do still struggle with how to do that. We're still sort of figuring out how to actually engage people beyond beyond our borders of academia, or beyond maybe people who were already going to engage with it anyway. I think it is good. I think it's, as everything done a bit imperfectly, and I will admit I struggle with that. You know, I have ideas about how to do it. I would love to get my research out there for everyone to see, but I struggle with what's the best way to do it in a way that people will actually engage with.
I think in a way it also, I was going to say it reflects sort of even the diverse, the growing diverse base within which studies work, which might be sort of very academic or partially or tangentially. So even people who keep studying later on in life, maybe stop a little bit, enter a particular field of work, sort of pursue a change in career, and then go back in order to sort of keep building one's critical tools and analysis. I'd like to take even closer look at that, and even within other areas of your work and writing in the third part. But before we get to the final part of the program today, Min Campus Elihor, I'm speaking to Dr. Kyla Rush. Kyla, you've chosen another track for us, the second track, and I'd like you to introduce it and tell us something about it as well.
Of course. So this is a song called Ha Ha Armageddon by a band called The Julie Ruin. The Julie Ruin is Bikini Kill lead singer Kathleen Hanna's, one of her later projects, that actually, I believe, started as a bedroom project for her, and then sort of she surrounded herself with bandmates. So I was actually introduced to the song in the course of my research. I was doing a bit of research with a school of rock in the United States who were doing a Riot Girl themed program, so a learning and performance program around feminist punk from the 90s. So, of course, they were engaging with Bikini Kill because that's kind of the band that you engage with if you talk about Riot Girl. And this was on the set list, and I never would have come across it otherwise. You know, it just wasn't on my radar. But I enjoy it. I think it's fun to listen to. I do play a bit of keyboard, albeit very badly. So having a song that has, like, a really cool keys riff is really fun. But also, this was really the song that these students latched onto. You know, these are students who were not born yet when Riot Girl happened. Were not born yet, I don't even think, when the song premiered. Maybe they were. That's beside the point. But, you know, students for whom
early days.
Riot Girl was not part of their life, because they're all teenagers. Yes. And yet, seeing them latch onto this song was really exciting. And so But I enjoy it, but I also kind of remember the excitement of doing this research, and I remember how excited and how into it all those students were as well. And this was really my very first piece of research I did on this new line of research that I'm developing now on rock music education. So it's sort of like a nice bookend. So we got the horn solo that's sort of like right before I started my scholarly career, and now we have this song that for me symbolizes this movement into what for me is a really exciting new area of research and something that I'm really, really excited to be developing right now. And it's also just a really cool song. It's fun to listen to.
Let's listen to it then. So we're back after listening to that, as my guest today, Kyla Rush, said, a really cool song, something which sort of makes you stop, think, also move a little bit around with it. And in the light of what you said, Kyla, about sort of how this has somehow accompanied you, so really in terms of a soundscape, of a background or even foreground element in your life, and making it very much an area of study, engagement, even of communication within and even outside academia. Somehow, it takes us to the last part of our conversation, last 10 minutes or so, in today's Min Campus Alihor, this program where we sort of try to use this radio station, Campus FM, at the University of Malta, as a springboard to reach out to different pieces of research and the people who run this research in different campuses or research centers around the world. And one thing which I found interesting as well in your work is sort of this loose ability to be very porous, to allow influences to come in and then reach out again in collaborations, through joint research groups, presenting stuff at seminars and networks, and hopefully we have sort of even more of these in a physical format growing out of the pandemic restrictions, by the by. There's also an element which struck me quite a bit, which is, for example, your work on research blogs or participation on podcasts, or as listeners can observe during this conversation, conversations of using radio and other means to somehow break maybe traditional formats of having research papers or journals, using them, but also linking them with other areas. One particular research blog which struck me is the Women Are Boring research blog, for example, which takes us back sort of to the idea of the body politic and the different representation within society. I wonder whether you see sort of more of a future, not only for yourself, but even maybe for colleagues, even your students, in this field of trying to mix formats and using this as one way of keeping this flow coming and going.
Absolutely. I think I'm seeing it more and more. I'm getting myself involved in, you know, blog projects, as you said, podcasts. I've just been part of a group that actually grew out of a traditional academic conference that is putting together a set of podcasts interviewing artists. So we're all people who research with artists and wanted to sort of make a joined up podcast series about that. So that is meant to be out, I think, later this month or possibly next. Yeah, there's a lot more opportunities there, and it's quite exciting to see it develop, and I'm seeing myself drawn in more and more to doing that. I have a few kind of vague ideas for web projects that I'm hoping to develop in the new year, because it's free or low cost. You know, it's something we can do mostly just at the cost of our own labor, which is not free, and it's you know, it's very important and valuable, but it's not something that we have to get enormous research grants to do. Yes. And it's not locked behind a paywall, which I think is great. Now, realistically, do I think that everyone in the world will listen to a podcast I'm on? No. But, you know, if it gives me a chance to reach out to scholars I might not have met otherwise, or just interested listeners who don't work in academia, I think that's fantastic.
It's sort of building bridges, building new audiences. In a way, it also reminds me a bit of your going through your sort of bio note and CV and other things, which are all online because you're also very present online. It reminds me a bit also of maybe other friends and colleagues of mine, including myself, where sort of you know that you need some things which may be a bit long term, if not permanent, and you need some income to be stable and coming in. But at the same time, maybe on the basis of that, you can experiment and try a few things. So earlier on, a few years ago, I see that you were involved even in, for example, organic gardening, for example, which I guess in and of itself is also a social practice. It's also a way of building community bridges and observing, in a way, not formally, not carrying out a formal sort of research project, but getting involved as you would also have done, I guess, being involved in the Four Corners Festival. So you would have been there, out there, and part of that. Coming to the last 5 minutes of our conversation, this is where maybe we can put a little bit on our sort of mentors or tutors hats, also trying to, let's say, sort of impart words of wisdom without wanting to sound too old. or too presumptuous at the end of this program. But sort of keeping in mind also our listeners who might be students, prospective students, lifelong learning students, how important do you think even in today's very, very sort of liquid world where it's hard to have maybe a bit of stability? You've written also about sort of different demographic groups, even in terms of gender, in terms of women. Sort of trying to piece all these things together, but at the same time, still pursue things which make sense.
Yeah, so it's tricky, and I think it's going to be different for every person. So what's gotten me to where I am today is just following up the things that interest me, but I'm also very aware that I'm very privileged to have been able to have gotten to this point in my career to have, at the moment, a stable job. If not a permanent job, based on the things that interest me. So I think kind of following your gut, following the things that interest you is good, but also being open to whatever comes along. So I know you were talking about kind of blogs and podcasts and digital media. The reason I've gotten involved in that is not that I am a visionary or even really good with tech. It's just that I've seen things come along where I've had people ask me to be involved in them, and I've just said yes. Now, I'll say that with a caveat. You know, in academia, there is this intense pressure to say yes to everything that is not me. So I'm not by any means advising students or early career scholars to say yes to everything without thinking it through, to put themselves at risk, to burn themselves out. But I think being open to unusual things that come along, being able to be willing to say yes to things that you maybe wouldn't have thought of is going to set you in good stead, whether it's in academia or in a different career. And will hopefully give you a bit of flexibility in terms of then being able to move porously through these disciplinary boundaries, and hopefully increasingly between the boundary between academia and other types of work. So I think that being open in that way can be valuable.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's sort of that, but as you said, with the sort of fallback that you'd have a bit of some constant lines which really lead back to oneself, sort of keeping developing and feeding those interests. We're down to the last couple of minutes, Kayla. You mentioned the book. You mentioned your sort of ongoing, even renewed, strengthened interest in the issues of conflict and policy as well. Just, however, to sum up, where do the next few months, maybe year or so, see you? Where do you see yourself actually go in the next few months or couple of years, so to speak?
So the next few months, the thing I'm working toward now is I'm going on holiday in Spain in December.
Oh, that's good. That's always a good thing.
That's what's keeping me going. But until then, I'm writing very intensely. I've just completed very intensive round of field work, and I'm starting another one. So I'm trying to write it up, and you can't see it because this is radio, but I'm in my office, and I have this whiteboard that has a list of sort of all the threads I want to follow up, and I think I'm at 8 or 9 different things. So I'm at that very exciting but kind of daunting creative step where I'm trying to make sense of it, and I'm following up all these different things that interest me. And then I'm going to take a break. I'm going to go on holiday. It's going to be lovely. And then in terms of the next few years, I have another 9 months on my postdoc, which is wonderful. It is made possible by a COVID extension from the Higher Education Authority of Ireland, so many thanks to them for making that available. But this postdoc has really cemented for me that the research I'm doing now on rock music schools is what I want to be doing for the next 5, 10, 20 years. This is my thing. This is the thing that I really want to develop. You know, it's a private fees-based rock schools are not really studied in academia at the moment. There's not a lot of work out there on them. Most of the work is on rock education in schools, whereas I'm looking at extracurricular non-school related kind of privately funded spaces. So it gives me this really exciting arena in which I can do something new and do something that hasn't been done yet and follow up all these questions it's raising for me about understanding what's going on here. So that's going to be me for the next 20 years. You're just going to hear me talking about this more and more. I'm sure everyone will get very sick of it in a few years' time, but that's the idea. That's long term. As with most people in postdocs, the next step is to get a permanent job.
Exactly. And that's always a challenge, a constant challenge.
Yeah.
Kayla, I thank you very much for sharing those views, experiences, anecdotes, and the music as well on this program. I found it very interesting, and I'm sure our listeners will have to. So thank you very much, Kayla. Nittama li dik l-intervista ma' Kayla Rush minn Dublin oġbitkom, kif fattilkom fil-bidu, kif smajtu matul l-intervista, ħafna aspetti differenti ma' fl-istessin marbutin dawn il-possibilitajiet li wieħed illum bil-kapaċitajiet u bil-ħiliet li wieħed ikollu jibqa' jiżviluppa, u kif kont qed ngħid fil-bidu forsi mhux jagħlaq imma aktar jiftaħ u jwessa possibilitajiet ta' kollaborazzjoni bejn nies f'kampijiet differenti. Nistedinkom tkunu magħna program ieħor ġumgħa d-dieħla fis-sensiela minn Campus għal ieħor.